This week's parsha is Parshas Bereishis. We don't always have the opportunity to speak about Parshas Bereishis. Very often we start off the Zman with Parshas Noach, so it's really a big schus to start at the beginning of it all. There's a pasuk in the parsha in Perek Dalet, pasuk Vav. Vayomer Hashem el Kayin, Lama Charalach v'lama Naflu Fanecha. Hashem says to Kayin, why are you so upset? Why is your face so down? The background, of course, to this question was that Kayin decided that he wanted to bring a carbon to Hashem. Kayin was a farmer, and he brought produce as a carbon. He offered that up to Hashem. It was not superior produce. It was sort of inferior. And then Hebel sees that Kayin brought a carbon and says, that's a good idea, and I also should bring a carbon. So he brought, he had sheep, he had cattle, and he brought from the finest of his flock, he brought as a carbon. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned towards Hebel's carbon, the one who brought the finer one, and to Kayin he rejected. Kayin's offering was not accepted. Hebel, his offering was, because it was of a higher quality. And when Kayin saw that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rejected his offering, he understandably was upset. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks to him and says, Kayin, why are you so upset? Lama charalach v'lama naflu fanecha, halayim tetiv se'es. If you improve, you do tshuva, you do things right, everything will be good. And if not, la pesach atas reivetz. And it's a fascinating response that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to Kayin. After all, Kayin could have done better, maybe should have done better. He brought an offering. That was a nice idea that he had. He was the first one, perhaps, to bring a carbon to Hashem, although there are medrashim that say, of course, that Adam brought a carbon also. But Kayin sort of was mechadish, this concept of bringing a carbon to Hashem. And Hashem saw that, you know, it wasn't a great carbon. He didn't accept it. But he could have said, you know, why didn't you make it greater? I mean, you have so much. Why wouldn't you share your offering with me on a finer level? But instead, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes Kayin and tries to mollify him, tries to ease his concerns. Why are you so upset? Why is your mood so glum? Cheer up, everything is going to be good. Basically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving Kayin chizuk. And I want to share with you today, this morning, a beautiful maimer from Reb Leo Baruch Finkel, who was one of the Rosh Yeshivas in the Mir in Yerushalayim. He was nifter decades ago at a very young age, maybe in his early 60s. And it was a very big tragedy for Klal Yisrael when that happened, because he was really a tremendous gadol then, and he was only going to get bigger, a rising star in Klal Yisrael's firmament, a tremendous Talmud Chacham and a tremendous Baal Mechadish. His svarim are gaining great, great popularity. This is what one of the volumes looks like, Mishulchan Reb Leo Baruch. I love these svarim. He has on Chumash, he has on the Mayadim two volumes, Chumash two volumes. He has on, they just put out a Haggadah this past year that was a runaway bestseller. And he has, of course, svarim on Shas that you probably have used, perhaps. It's considered one of the major svarim today in the Torah world to be used on the Yeshiva Shemesechtas. Rabbi Shmulevitz, our former Menal, told me that he was chavrusas with Rabbi Elia Baruch in the mirror when he as Bachrim, I think, and he said to me that, you know, he had such a kayach of chiddush. He was a mayan and miskaber, like they would sit down at the beginning of the zman, you know, you start learning the first Mishnah on whatever mesechta you're learning, and, you know, you want to get your feet wet a little bit, you learn the Mishnah, Rashi, Taisas, you try to start, you know, just getting your hands and feet into the sugya a little bit, and from like the first line of the Mishnah, before you even got to Rashi, Taisas, already like spouting chidushei Torah. He had such a, he was so such an unbelievable reservoir of chiddushei Torah that he just was like unstoppable. And he has, you know, the svarim that are coming out now are unbelievable. Anyway, but I wanted to share with you this morning something that I saw in his sefer on this pasuk, on this idea. And I think it's very relevant for the matzav that we are all in now in Klal Yisrael. He says that from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response, Lama Charalach V'Lama Naflu Fanecha, we learn that it's the mitzvah of Alachta Bedrachav, Mahu Afata, whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows is his midas, is what we have to try to make our midas. We have to adopt the behavior of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have to imitate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a racham, we have to be racham. He's a chanan, we have to be chanan. He's erech apayim, we have to be erech apayim. But one of the first midas in the Torah that you see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has of his many, many midas taivas is the fact that he has what we call being noisei ba'ol im chaveroi. He has the ability to share in his brother, in somebody else's plight. It's very easy in life to say, Shalom alei nafshi, are things good by me? Everything is good by me. Baruch Hashem, I have a job. I have a chavrusa. I have a family. I have friends. I have money. I have support. I have whatever I have health. So Shalom, I'm good. Baruch Hashem, life is amazing. All I have to do is just worry, check the box, check all the boxes off that I need to be checked, and I'm good, I'm fine. And that's the way a normal human being behaves. If everything is good by me, life is great. But Klal Yisrael is expected to live on a much higher plane, a much higher level, and that we have to look at other people outside of our Dalet Amos and see how they're faring. Are they doing okay? Because if they're not doing well, then I'm not doing well. I might have a great job, but if my friend next to me in shul is out of work and he's struggling to pay his bills, then that's my problem. It's as if I am unemployed. I need to go, just like if I was out of work, I would go and network and find every which way to get employment. I have to do that for my friend who's out of work. If I see that my friend is suffering some sort of loss, a tragedy, a sickness, whatever the issue may be, even if I don't have that issue, it's upon me, it's incumbent upon me as a good Jew to be able to look at Yanim, to look at the other person and say, that's my problem. I want to help you out. I'm going to be here to schlep with you, to help you be nice ba'al, to pick up the load that you are schlepping all by yourself and to tell you that you're not in this alone. I'm here with you. Do you know how helpful that is for another person to know that they're not alone? I remember reading in a book, one of my favorite books is a book called Joseph. It's a very underrated, unknown book. And I myself have tried to tell Talmidim to look at it, to read it. It's about a Sephardic Jew, a Syrian Jew in Brooklyn. A regular balabas, which is really why I like those types of books. I love Gedolim books, as you know, but like I have a special appreciation for books that are not about Gedolim. Because very often, as soon as you hear, okay, he was a Gadol HaDor, he was a Gaon, he was a Baki in Shas, immediately your eyes start glazing over and you can't like relate almost because like, okay, I didn't finish Bava Kam, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra by 6, and I didn't make a Siyam on Kol HaTorah Kulo by 12, and I didn't have a, you know, it's unrelatable to me. But you can certainly relate to a Balabayas that grew up maybe modern Orthodox, that had a very limited Torah background, but yet was a gadol in Tzidkus. And this person, he was a very wealthy Syrian Jew, and he could have very easily said, Shalom alei nafshi, everything is good by me, but he went out and he spearheaded many great organizations, Sfardik Bikur Chaylim, to help people that are sick in his community, to help people that are unemployed find work, build businesses, take care of their medical needs, their family's needs. And it's one story after another, but like one story that was a very poignant for me is that he had a friend, and his friend was going through a terrible tzara. I think he was, his friend maybe was in the hospital with a daughter that was maybe in a car accident or very, very sick. And it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, in the middle of the night, early morning, and this friend was in the hospital, and Joseph comes with a whole bunch of food, maybe it was like Chinese food, and he basically brings it in the late hours of the night, early hours of the morning, to this friend and said, I'm here with you. We're in this together. And being nice to Elam Chaver, you don't have to be a gadol hadar to do that. You just have to have a heart that cares. And this person, imagine the person in the hospital all alone monitoring his daughter by her bedside and feeling like that he has nowhere to turn. And then like a knight in shining armor, this very well-known person in the Syrian community is there by his side and bringing him food and bringing him chizuk. That's what Naisei Ba'alam Chaver means. He could have easily stayed in his home and maybe texted him something or called him, but he went there by himself with food, with a smile, with chizuk. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, the very first story in the Torah. Hashem says to Cain, why are you so upset? Lama naflu fanecha. I'm here for you. I'm with you. I'm not abandoning you. Cheer up. Everything is going to be good. I'm here to bring you Chinese food and to be here with you and to give you a hug and give you a kiss. HaKadosh Baruch Hu cared to see that Cain was upset about something, and rather than turning his back on him and saying, you deserved it, good for you. This is what happens when you don't bring a great carbon like your brother Havel. No. Lama naflu fanecha. Lama charalach, what's going on? Talk to me. Speak it out. Let me hear what your problems are. And I'm going to help you through this. This is how we're mistabik in the midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then he continues, Rabbi Eliyahu Baruch, and he says that, and I never thought about this until Rabbi Eliyahu Baruch comes along and is ma'irit. Like, what did Hevel do wrong? You ever wonder that? Like, Cain murdered his brother Hevel, but if Hevel died, presumably there was a taina on him. And we know there's an Arachayim HaKadosh in Parashas Vayeshev that speaks about this very concept of is it possible to kill somebody and that person didn't really deserve to die. That's a very thorny theological debate, and it's across the board. There's Yesh Tzadim Lakan and Lakan, meaning is every time something bad happens, does that mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu certainly perhaps knew about it, but to say that this is the Ratzon Hashem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended for this to happen, is that always the case? If a person just kills another person, is that, in an unexpected way, it wasn't a car accident, it wasn't a sickness, does that mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted that to happen or had that hashgachas el yayna? That's a different discussion. It's way above my pay grade. The Arachayim HaKadosh seems to imply that it's possible to kill somebody even though he wasn't chayev misa. So if that's the case, it's not really such a question because Hevel died. Maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to punish Hevel, just Cain took Hevel's life. But if you don't hold of the Arachayim HaKadosh, so then it's taka like why? Why did Hevel do that? He brought a beautiful carbon. Why does he die? And Rabbi Eliyahu Baruch says that perhaps the pshat is that he died because he didn't follow in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's midah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is nice about Elam Chaver. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that Cain was suffering. Cain felt very bad when HaKadosh Baruch Hu rejected his carbon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu went and commiserated with him and gave him his proverbial shoulder. But Hevel didn't. Hevel should have said, Cain, I'm sorry, you're my brother, I love you. Better luck next time. Next time, you know, we'll do it better. Your carbon will be accepted next time and mine won't. Give him some chizuk. But Hevel was quiet. Hevel saw his brother suffering, squirming, uncomfortable, agitated. And instead of doing anything, Hevel just let him wither and let him slither and let him be alone in his plight. And maybe that's why, he says, Hevel was chayev misa. That's the degree of importance that HaKadosh Baruch Hu places on being nice about chaveray, that if you don't go about caring about your friend, about your brother, when he's in his crisis, and you're not lending him a helping hand and a shoulder to cry on and financial support and moral support, beguf ubenefesh ubemamen, if you're not doing that, then that's tantamount to doing something that is on the level of a chiyuv misa. He says one other thing that I think is very important to see, and that is that meruba mida tayv mida peranias. He brings a beautiful example of somebody that did respond to the call, that did see somebody else upset and went and answered the call. Now, if I were to ask you, who is that? I think you might all say, because the classical case of being nice about Chavera, every shmuz on that parsha is by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, he says that Vayigdal Moshe, Vayetzel Echa, Vayar B'Siv Leisam. Moshe Rabbeinu went out when Klal Yisrael were... he was in the power of palace. He grew up in the lap of luxury. He goes out. He sees his brethren slaving away in the, in the Egyptian, building mines and building Pisum and Ramses, and how much they're going through. And he lends them a hand. He's literally nice about him. Chaver Rashi says Nasan Einay V'Libay Liyes Meitzer Aleihem. He wants to protect them. He cares for them. He struggles with them. He shares their plight. He could have stayed in the air-conditioned palaces of Paro, but he went out in the heat and suffered alongside his brothers. That's, I think, the classical example of being nice to Elam Chaver. But he sees something earlier in history. By Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik, he was in jail together with the Sarah Mashkim and the Sarah Eifim. They have very frightening dreams. And Yosef could have said to him, and they wake up, they're all upset. They're very upset. Something is very much disturbing them. And Yosef didn't need that. Yosef could have very easily, looked the other way and said, these are Gayim, and I don't need to look at them, I need to help them. He didn't. He sees them, and he says to them, Madua pneichem roim hayim. Why is your face bad? Very similar lashon to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Cain. Lama naflu panecha, lam madua pneichem ram hayem. What's wrong? I see something's upsetting you. Tell me what it is. So he went and he reached out to the Sarah Mashkim. He reached out to the Sarah Eifim. Tell me what's on your mind. Something is bothering you. What is it? Share. And what happened as a result of it? They told him their dreams. He interpreted their dreams. Their dreams came to fruition. The interpretations that Yosef gave was spot on. And as a result of that, it wasn't instantaneous. But 2 years later, he was saved. He was brought up from the bar, brought into the house of Paroi to interpret Paroi's dreams when that was necessary. And he saved Mitzrayim. He saved his own family from the famine. And he became the mashpir of the entire Eretz. Why? How did this happen? What was the origin of the Hatzlacha of Yosef? How did Yosef become the great Yosef HaTzadik that he became? How was he able to be the viceroy of Mitzrayim to save the world? All because he asked one question, Madua Pneichem Ra'im Hayim. We see the contrast between when a person doesn't look at somebody caringly and with a kind heart, kind word, commiseratingly. That's Hevel. Hevel dies. All because he didn't ask his brother, Lama charalach, lama naflu fanecha. Yosef atzadik, madua pnechem ram hayayim. Yosef, betzeis al eretz Mitzrayim. Yosef became the king of Egypt, the viceroy of Egypt. All because he asked this one simple question, madua pnechem ram hayayim. Something's bothering you. Something's on your mind. What is it? Tell me. Before we get to the macro lesson to be taken here, I want to just say a micro lesson to be taken here. And that is something that he also says, Rabbi Elia Baruch. And he was speaking to Yeshiva Bachem in the mirror. He was speaking to Talmidim. And he basically says that in yeshiva itself, it's very important to be nice b'alam chaveri. He brings a known story that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said to the Alter from Slabodka that the main purpose of hakamas hayeshiva, what's the main purpose of a yeshiva? Yes, we learn Torah. You can learn Torah. You don't have to be in yeshiva to learn Torah. You don't have to be in yeshiva. Sometimes I think, like, you know, it would be much cheaper just to, you know, like, Zoom everybody. Like, what do you have to have this big building and food and whatever? Send everybody home. We did it during COVID, right? It's much cheaper. It's much more efficient. You listen to Shirim online. It's a million Shirim online. You can listen to this Shir online. What do you have to be in yeshiva for? What do we gain from being in yeshiva? It's very costly. It's very, you know, you could do whatever you're doing. Do it remote. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says there's one major purpose of being in yeshiva. And for that, the entire yeshiva system was founded. And he said it's lahachyais ruach shefalim ulahachyais lev nitkaim. So pasuk, it's quoted by the Rambam, by Benegeya Matanis Lavyayinim on Purim. But basically what it means is that the purpose of being in yeshiva is to do like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to breathe life into people that are feeling low about themselves, and to revive the hearts of those that are crushed. Meaning, to go to shir, you don't need to come to yeshiva to go to shir. You could do that online, go to your local shul. The main purpose of being in a yeshiva, in any yeshiva in the world, is in order to look at your friend, look at your roommate, at your chavrusa, at the guy sitting next to you in shir, notice what's going on with him and try to uplift him. Try to make him a whole person. Try to figure out what's wrong. What's bothering you? What's on your mind? I see something's on your mind. Madua pneichem ramayim. We don't have this. We never have a roommate or a friend and they were doing well, and all of a sudden they look like horrible, and we don't know what it is. So sometimes, you know, sometimes you ask, sometimes you just ignore it and say, okay, he's probably just in a bad mood, maybe something else. Maybe we can help that person. Maybe there are people that actually need us more than we know that they need us. Maybe we're much more powerful than we think we are. Sometimes, you know, we don't realize that charity starts at home. We're busy sometimes saving the world, and we're doing Time Chei Shabbos, and we're doing Hatzalah, and we're doing Chaverim, we're helping random people with random problems, and then our own friends need us. Our own people in yeshiva need us. There's so much to be done in the yeshiva itself to be nice about them Chaverai. And this is true for you, it's true for me, it's true for everybody, whoever's in this building. If there's something that is going on with the other person, that's why we're here. We're here to learn the art of helping somebody else when they need it. And it means sometimes, you know, filling up the urn in the coffee room so that people have what to, that's also being nice. Worrying about other people, if somebody's sick in the dorm, to bring back food for them, to care for them, to help them, you know, get them notes from their classes or whatever that they might have missed. If somebody's struggling in shir, he's not getting shir, he's a little weaker than you are. So offer to learn with him a little bit. Pick him up. There's a million cases. We could spend the whole day discussing different things, what a person could do to help somebody else. But in yeshiva itself, this is the matara of the yeshiva. This isn't just like a shmuz that, you know, is nice on a when you have some free time. This is what we're here for. And when we're here, when we get that skill, when we're in yeshiva of Neisa Be'elam Chaveray, then we'll be able to be like the Josephs of our community. When we go out, we'll be able to help other people when they're having tzaras. We'll be able to help our wives if she's not doing well, and our children when they're not doing well, and our parents and our siblings and our cousins and our nephews when they're not doing well. This is something that sometimes people instinctively know to do this. And sometimes people are oblivious to it. I'm doing well. What do I have to worry about them for? Let them worry about themselves. And I'll worry about myself. And Shalom Alei Nafshi, things are good. I'm doing quite well, thank you very much. And let them, I don't know, somebody else will take care of them. No. The person to take care of them is you. You're the one that they're waiting to knock on their door to help. Just merely saying good morning to people with a nice smile will pick a person up. But then if you go a step further and you ask them, what's doing, how are you? It's a tremendous midah. That's mamish v'alachta bedrachav. Lama charalach, v'lama naflu fanecha. Tell me what's on your mind. Which brings us, of course, to the macro lesson that we're living with today. We're sitting here in America and we're reading the news obsessively about what's going on in Eretz Yisrael. Every new news item, if you're like me, you're swallowing it up. And I don't want to swallow. I'd rather not look at it because it's horrific. And all it does is like make me tremendously depressed, you know, and it's just, you know, it's an incomprehensible situation that we're facing this in these days that Klal Yisrael has not faced in, you know, since the Holocaust. The amount of people that have been killed, slaughtered, Al Kiddush Hashem, in one day. And all the people, 150 perhaps people that are taken hostage, dead, alive, we don't even know, in Gaza, which is not exactly the place that you ever want to go on a good day, but let alone on a day like today. And there are people, as we speak, this second, that they're going through. Imagine for a second what those people are going through that are in Gaza, in some dungeon somewhere, in some tunnel somewhere, without food, without water, without electricity. Why are they there? They're not different than you and me. They didn't do anything wrong. They're Jews, we're Jews. If not for them, we would be there. If we would have been where they were, there's no crime except for being a Jew. It's not about Israel and Zionism. It's about being Jewish. They'll kill us here on the streets of New York. They're equal opportunists. Equal opportunity terrorists, anti-Semites, Rishon. But as we speak now, just think about that for 1 second, not to get you crazy, but think about 1 second what they're going through at this moment in time. We're not talking history. We're not talking future. We're not talking potential theoretics. This is right now. There are people going through this right now. And think about what the relatives of these people are going through. Think about what the relatives of people that were killed are going through. Think about all of the men, women, and children in Eretz Yisrael today that are scarred for life. Imagine if you're living in any community in Eretz Yisrael, realizing that perhaps, you know, you weren't as secure as you always imagined that you were. And that at any given moment, there could be terrorists rushing into your house and Rahman al-Islam doing unthinkable atrocities. Imagine the scarring, the fear, the terror that Achinu B'nai Yisrael are experiencing as we speak. And then there's like the things that we're not even talking about, like the things that are, you know, that no one's, that they're smaller, but they're huge. People that, because of the lockdowns in Eretz Yisrael, because people are not going out in the streets, they're afraid to go, so all the makolets, all the businesses that are not able to exist, the taxi drivers that are suffering because no one's taking taxis anywhere, Every businessman that needs to be mefarnes his family and he has no means, he has no way of getting out and doing business. And the tsaras that are compounding on such people. The bills are coming in, the electricity bills and the credit card bills and the water bills, and they have no way to pay them because they were assuming that they'd be able to go out and work, but they can't. Or they're in miluim, they're on the front lines, and they're, you know, certainly can't do their businesses. There's a million and one things that every single Yid in Eretz Yisrael today needs our help. And there are many ways that we could, you know, help and, you know, with money, or we could package things, or we could do, and those are all tzaddikim gemurim that are engaged in all of these campaigns that we see online of trying desperately to send over helmets and equipment and food and dolls and coloring books and whatever you could do is unbelievable. But just merely feeling their pain is also something. Doing something for them in their zchus, saying tehillim for them, which we have, davening for them, which we have, learning for them, which we have. Every time we learn something, this shir, let's dedicate this shmuz in the zchus of every single Yid in Eretz Yisrael and around the world for that matter, that are scared, that are terrorized, that are sitting shiva, that are bepachad mavis. The zchus that we have, that we came together this morning and we're talking about these things, we're learning Torah, we're sharing ideas, we want to change, we want to improve ourselves. That's a tremendous chus for them. Feeling for them, feeling their pain, not allowing ourselves to just go about our day-to-day lives as if nothing happened. It's very easy to do that. It's quite easy to do that. We're living in America. We have freedom to go and walk the streets and be and do and in college and do our work and do, you know, we could just be, and we want to do that because it's very hard to be depressed and to think so much and so intently about what's going on there because we don't want to you know strain our own peace of mind and we shouldn't. We have to be normal. We have to be functional. We have to be strong, but at the same time we have to cry for them. We have to feel their pain, even if we do absolutely nothing in a physical, tangible way to help them. We're not packaging duffel bags and sending them off but just feeling their pain, being nice about Chavera. I feel for you. I'm sorry for you. I'm davening for you. I'm thinking about you. I'm learning for you. I'm calling my relatives and I'm texting them. I'm ima nechi b'tzara. I'm here for you. I'm with you. What can I do for you? Is there anything I could do for you here? Something. But just to be able to like put this huge bubble around ourselves, to imagine that they're there and they, you know, this is the price you pay for living in the Middle East and we're here in the safe shores of America, Kaviyachol, you know, that's not what a Yid is supposed to do. We have to be better than that. We have to rise to much higher levels of expectations for ourselves. And I'm talking to myself as well. I never preach something that, you know, that I'm not working on myself. It's a job. It's an avodah because we want to be normal. We want to like compartmentalize our life and not dwell on it so much. But we have to. When another yid's in a tzara, then we have to be there for them. Tell you another story with Joseph. There are so many of them there in that book, but there was a person, he was at a chasna. You know, sometimes you're at a chasna and mishulachim come and you're in the middle of a conversation with somebody next to you and there's a mishulach that comes and he taps you on the shoulder, yeah, what do you, you know, and he says, you know, tzedakah, and he sticks like a whole lot of bills in your face and sometimes you give, sometimes you don't give. So somebody came over to Joseph at a chasna, at a wedding, and Joseph says, he didn't just say, here's a dollar and like, leave me alone. He says, what are you collecting for? What's your issue? He says, the doctor found some sort of growth in my arm, and it's very severe, and if I don't get a surgery right now, I'm going to lose my arm. Right now, they could go into my arm and take it out, but it's, and that would save my arm, or else they're going to just have to amputate the arm. He says, the problem is they only do it here in America, and I don't have insurance in America, so I have to pay out of pocket. So he says to him, How much is a surgery? How much does a doctor expect to make, you know, without insurance? Said $100,000. And this is, $100,000 is still an awful lot of money, but this was going back probably 25 years ago when $100,000 was probably $250,000 today, maybe. So he said $100,000 for an arm? That's cheap. It's like a mitzvah, $100,000 for an arm. Save your arm is $100,000. I would say, okay, here's $5, maybe, if I was in a really good mood. Okay, now you just have to find, you know, 20,000 other people to give you $5, and you're done. So Joseph got up by the chasna, and he went around the tables to all these wealthy Syrian businessmen, and he put together within a few minutes the $100,000 and gave it to the guy. He says, now go save your arm. That's godless, right? This isn't a Maisa or Maisa Feinstein or the Stipler. This is a regular, ordinary person. A regular, ordinary person. He Nebuch died young. He had Yena Machla, and he died very young himself. But a regular person, just to be nice, I have to think about, I don't always have $100,000 to give out to people. That's true. So you could say, all right, that story is not negated to me either. That's not the point. We always try to make chilukim. Okay, that's not negated to me. Here's, well, of course, if I was wealthy, I would have. Just take in the message that he actually had a heart and an ear to listen and to process and to jump into action in any way possible, to commiserate with somebody and to feel their pain and to try as best as they can to mollify the person, to make the person feel good and to ease their suffering, to soothe their nerves. And this is something that, this is the takeaway from this parsha, from this beautiful yesaid that we learned together this morning. To always try as best we can to be nice b'olam chaveira in general, but no greater time than the present, that we're literally in a matzav that was unprecedented in Klal Yisrael's history in the last 80, 90 years. Never seen such things. And people that are Holocaust survivors say they never saw such a thing. It's unbelievable. You know, in the olden days, if you wanted to like think about like how heinous Arabs are, how disgusting, how vile, how animalistic they are, I would tell you, look at the pictures in Hebron 1929. In 1929, the Hebron Yeshiva, which was a branch of Slabodka, they opened the branch in Hebron, and the Arabs one day came in, and they literally butchered, literally. You see don't look at the pictures, but if the pictures, I don't even want to describe the pictures, but they butchered the Jews there, and they cut off their limbs, and their and we thought, okay, but that was like in pre the state in 1929. Now we have a state, we have Tzal, we have Chayalim, we have tanks, we have F-35s, like that. We're good, we're safe. Was it ever Olal Adas that such a thing could happen in 2023? Is it possible to think, you all went to Eretz Yisrael, you all probably learned in yeshivas, I learned in yeshivas. You go there, you feel you're the king of the world when you're there. You have katzefet, and you have pizza, and you have falafel, you have shawarma, you have yeshivas, kailim, bako mikol kol, it's a beautiful country, it's safe, it's secure, it's obviously here and there are terrorists that mechablim, but this could never happen. And look at what happened, Laman Hashem. Look at what happens when there's no shmira. I'm not talking about the chayalim or Bibi. I'm talking about when the Rabbeinu Shalom removes the shmira from Klal Yisrael for whatever reason. Look at what we are up against. Look at the shivim ze'evim, the 70 wolves that are so hungry, insatiable for Jewish blood. It's unbelievable. This is not normal. And we all feel it. We do feel it. I know that we feel it. I look around yeshiva. I see the face in the room. I everywhere. No one can be normal. It's not, if you're acting normal, then there's something not normal about you. If you could go through this and not feel, you know, hurt and disgust and shame and indignant, then there's something not normal with anybody that's able to just go about their normal business. But more than that. We have to not just feel it in terms of our own personal, like, I don't feel comfortable with this. This is something that's very, very, you know, scary for me. And that's definitely something you have to deal with and process, and we all have that. But more than that, to feel the pain of the other Jews in the world, in every place, that are suffering and they're also in pain and they're still being terrorized by bombs as we speak. And we have to learn this important midah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be nisei ba'olam chaver, to think and to feel what are they going through right now. Yes, I'm not comfortable, but what are they going through? They're in their bomb shelters, it's Shabbos, it's Yonder, it's a week from last Shabbos. They're probably thinking, you know, remember what happened last Shabbos. These are things that, you know, we're blessed to be in a country that hopefully provides us security. But we are them, and they are us. We're one. We're brothers. We're them. And when we see these images, it's not just a curiosity. It's not just political. It's not just it's something personal. It's very personal. We all know people, I think, that were called up as reservists or as regular soldiers. We have cousins. We have uncles. We have people there in Eretz Yisrael that are right now, you know, literally about to start a ground invasion as we speak. We don't know what's going to be then. And you see about, you know, people that are already killed in the army. I know somebody that, a 21-year-old chayal, I knew his grandparents, his great-grandparents, a beautiful young man, and in the prime of his life, just cut down by terrorists the past few days. We have to learn how to feel when we see the pictures of all the people that are hostage, the pictures of the people that were killed, the chayalim, the regular, you know, man, woman, and child. We have to cry for them. We have to feel it. It has to go in. It's not just a news story, not a curiosity like, oh, look at this person, look at that person. We have to feel it. This is us. And Mitzvah Hashem, and we're able to feel their pain, we're able to misachid with Klal Yisrael, then that's the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will hopefully say, L'tzaraseinu, die, it's enough. Now it's enough. They got the message. It created achdus. It created the feeling of Lama Naflu Fanecha. I'm here for you. I'm worried about you. I think about you. I'm davening for you. I'm crying for you. And Mitzvah Hashem, the Eibishter should send Mashiach Tzidkenu quickly, speedily in our days, because we have never needed him more than today.